WAER Sports proudly presents the Ostrom Avenue Podcast.
At the 30, at the 20, cuts towards the middle, and Nykeem Johnson takes it home for a Syracuse touchdown.
The Orange going quick. Bounce pass, Jimmy Boeheim, baseline drive, and jam!
Going through all the good.
To the midline, it's bobbled, and Syracuse wins!
A winding shot by Trimboli, 10 yards out, shoots, he scores!
And all the bad.
Syracuse, bowl ineligible for the third straight year.
They made it into the NCAA tournament as a number 11 seed, but it is over as Houston moves on to the Elite Eight.
And now, here are your hosts, Johnny Gadamowitz and Ethan Frank.
It's time for another edition of the Ostrom Avenue Podcast. Johnny Gadamowitz, Ethan Frank with you as always. And today is a very special episode because we are officially, it's been in the works for a little bit from a behind the scenes standpoint, but today is the day where we officially introduce the new member of the team. It's Jordan Leonard. Jordan, how you doing today, man?
I'm doing good. It's good to get on. We got a crossover season just ending. We got Syracuse basketball not doing too good, so got a lot of hot takes.
So for anyone who is maybe new, first time listening to the podcast, a little bit more of, you know, tuning in as of recently and don't necessarily know how it works in terms of the host, the co-host, essentially what we do is every year it's a new member of the team as a senior graduates out. Jordan, who is now a sophomore at the moment, comes in. So feels like, you know, I was just in your shoes, and I'm sure, Ethan, you feel the same way.
Oh, as time absolutely. Absolutely. I could tell you the day when Ben introduced me onto the show, and I'm sure you could remember the day, Johnny, when Owen introduced you onto the show, or maybe it was Ben. I don't know. But I remember, you know, when we had those conversations last fall when you were like, would you like to join the team? And I was like, absolutely. And then when I had conversations with Jordan about joining the team, and here we are. He's been our terrific guest booker for the past, you know, month or so. That's why all the interviews you hear are with such, you know, great and talented people, because Jordan has been working the phones like a madman trying to set us up with people that have good stuff to say.
The mastermind behind the scenes. And you guys are really going to be holding the fort down for the most part. I mean, not too far from now, we'll continue to kind of, you know, triple team the rest of the basketball season here. But Jordan, I guess for all the, for all of our listeners back at home, you want to tell them a little bit about yourself, introduce yourself to the Ostrom Avenue Pod fan base.
Yeah. So I'm originally from New Jersey, but I have moved to sunny Florida.
Ooh.
So the weather is definitely better down there than it is up here. But I'm obviously a broadcast guy, big Mets guy, same thing as Ethan and Johnny, got that Mets lineage going. I'm a Jets fan, so they're doing good this year, which is always nice. But unfortunately I'm a Brooklyn Nets fan, so they're about pretty much average, and they're supposed to be good, but they're not doing very good.
I always say the combination of Mets, Jets, Knicks is terrible. Mets, Jets, Nets might be a little bit worse.
And it's a tongue twister.
I don't know.
You can never say it in a row.
Yeah. Well, Syracuse is, you add Syracuse into that fold right now, and there's really a whole lot of misery going around right now, particularly from a basketball standpoint. Let's hit on this Hoops team a little bit, guys. I mean, what was really just a flat-out embarrassing showing against Illinois earlier in the week. A game you put up only 44 points on the night. And I think everyone knew this was a game that the Orange were going into, a little bit over their heads to begin with as far as the matchup was concerned. But just a really disheartening effort, I think, is the word that comes to mind for me. And you think about the play on the court, and obviously what's going to get talked about is the goose egg from Joe Girard. But I think it stems so much deeper than that. I mean, no one in double figures. And Ethan, I know we've had the discussions of the talent disparity and the recruiting issues and what have you. I think this was the game where you could tell the most so far just how much of a problem the issues like that really have become.
Yeah, well, you look at the makeup of these two teams. You look at the makeup of Illinois. This is a team that only had four returning players from a season ago. Syracuse, similar. You think about the guys that are playing meaningful minutes that played on the team last year. You know, it's Joe, it's Jesse, it's Saimir, it's Benny barely. That's only four guys. Illinois brings in all these new transfers, all these new freshmen. You look at a guy like Terrence Shannon. That's someone who played at Texas Tech, played in the NCAA tournament 3 years in a row. You look at, you know, Coleman Hawkins is one of the holdovers. But you look at a transfer like Dane Danger. I mean, what a name. Can you believe that? What an incredible name, because he's just dangerous in the post. I'm sorry. I had to say that.
I saw it coming from about 200 miles away.
But, you know, when you're going up against a guy like that, Jesse Edwards just flat out isn't strong enough and isn't bulky enough to compete with a player like that. So Syracuse is lacking in the, you know, the speed and athleticism column in when it comes to Joe Girard going up against, you know, guys like Sky Clark and Terrence Shannon. And then it's lacking in the bulk when it comes to the forwards and the bigs, because Chris Bell, Benny Williams, Jesse Edwards are just, they just don't have the mass to match up with the bodies that teams are going to throw down low against you.
Yeah, I think also it's just, as you said, Illinois brings in a lot of new guys, but one of their experienced guys, Coleman Hawkins, goes out and gets a triple-double and helps them to that victory. And then you look at Joe Girard and Jesse Edwards, who are those experienced guys. They're not doing enough to really help Syracuse win games at this point. Judah Mintz can only do so much. When nobody's helping him, he goes 3-for-16. You need those experienced guys like Joe, Jesse, even Benny, who should have taken that sophomore leap to an extent, to help these new guys get used to the roster and get used to the game. And they're not doing that right now.
Syracuse couldn't have thrown a ball in the water if they were standing on the beach.
Yeah, to say the least. I think that what's most concerning to me, though, and this is something that received a little bit of attention throughout the week here, just paying attention to things throughout the week, but not nearly as much as I think it should have, is that, guys, Illinois didn't play a very good game. Like, the Illini on the night, excuse me, were 36% from the floor, only 28% from downtown, by no means an efficient night. They still won the game by 30 points. Like, is this a Syracuse team that is that far away from everybody else talent-wise?
Well,
when the other team has a bad night, you're still getting the doors blown off?
Well, when you make only 15 field goals, yes, because you're not going to win many games when you only score 44 points. So you have to credit Illinois' defense just because of the tenacity they played with. Syracuse, it was just nobody getting in a rhythm all night. Justin Taylor plays 23 minutes in this game off the bench. He was, you know, the guy on Saturday against Bryant when Judah Mintz was ejected. He was the offense in the second half because Girard once again was a no-show. So, you know, he makes a couple of threes, but that's pretty much it. Like, it doesn't matter what happens if you don't make shots. And Syracuse didn't make shots. Chris Bell goes 2-for-8. That's not going to cut it. If Joe doesn't score, then this team is going nowhere. I mean, like, he shouldn't be relied upon this much is the problem. You should not have to be relying on Joe Girard to score to be able to compete and win games. That is the overarching issue, is that Joe Girard should just be a guy that comes in off the bench, and if he gets hot off the bench, then great. If not, okay, he's just someone you have in your back pocket to throw out there. He should not be someone you're relying on to score 20 points a game, like Jim Boeheim said preseason.
Ethan, you're throwing Joe Girard on the bench already?
If he's not going to shoot well, what does he bring to the court?
That is a good question. I think he's one of those guys you need to run sets where he comes off a double screen and he can get that shot. But I think also he needs to realize is he went 0-for-3, but he doesn't drive the ball. To get a shooter going, you drive the ball, get a layup, get to the foul line where Joe Girard shoots 90% from, see the ball go through the hoop, and maybe then you can get hot. I mean, he scored 31 points against St. John's, and then he's tailed off from there. So I think part of SU's success is obviously tied to Joe Girard, as Ethan said. But somebody needs to score, and he needs to score to help out Judah Mintz, who's going to do a lot of the driving and the playmaking for Syracuse.
He's got 9 points over his last three games, does JG3. Let that sink in for a few minutes. It begs the question.
Yeah, he's sinking to the bottom of the bench is where he's sinking.
I don't know if I'm ready to put him on the bench. Could you imagine I mean, that would be.
I don't think it'll happen, but like from an eye test perspective, I don't know if I'd take Saimir over him, but I think I'd take Justin Taylor over him.
Yeah, I'm with you in that when he's not scoring, there is no contribution. Like it's not like he's bringing anything to the table defensively. It's not like he is much of a facilitator for the offense. Really, the only thing he has to give in terms of how he fits into this year's team is scoring the basketball. And I think, you know, everyone wanted to talk up, you know, sliding over to being off ball and kind of going back to that more natural position. And I don't think that move has paid dividends at all like people thought it would. Obviously, a situation that kind of needed to happen considering the presence of Judah Mintz on this team. But at some point, when it comes down to it, I think you really have to ask yourself what sort of benefits moving Gerard off the ball has in terms of Gerard himself and the team as a whole. Because you're 7 games in, you're 3-4. This team has more losses than it does wins at this point in the season as we sit here recording on December the 1st. So, Ethan, I'll go to you here now. What is the road ahead for this Syracuse team? How do you salvage what's left of this non-conference schedule? An ACC opener coming up this weekend against Notre Dame and South Bend. But after that, some games that I think the Syracuse faithful would like to think are winnable and are there for the taking. How do you make sure that those games are get right games?
Well, 3 things. And I'll start with your first question. After this Notre Dame game, Syracuse should win 6 games in a row. There's no way around that. You play Oakland, Georgetown, Monmouth, Cornell, Pitt, and BC, and then Louisville. Actually, 7 games. And then Louisville. Louisville hasn't won a game. So I guess maybe Syracuse fans should be thankful they aren't Louisville because things are going pretty bad down there in Kentucky.
Or Florida State, for that matter.
Or Florida State.
Florida State pushed Purdue yesterday, right?
Yeah, but still lost.
Yeah,
so
yeah,
that's 7 winnable games. 7 games you probably should be favored in. So there is hope for this team to get some momentum. But going back to Joe, I think the problem is twofold. The first is that Judah is not a pass-first point guard. He is a scoring point guard, and he wants to get downhill and go to the basket, go to his pull-up mid-range game, which is good. It wasn't good against Illinois. That was the first time it wasn't good. But usually it has been on more often than it has been off. The second is that Syracuse doesn't run offense. It's the offense is Judah, Jesse, pick and roll, and everyone else stand on the perimeter and don't move. I remember the days when Syracuse was running sets on offense. Those days are over. Like, when was the last time you saw them call a play or like do something on offense? I can't remember seeing an off-ball screen like ever. So I think that is the main issue, is that Syracuse's offense is so one-dimensional and so reliant on Judah and Jesse to win one-on-one that's why it's struggling so much.
Yeah, I would tend to agree. You don't really see much organization on the offense, and that's why you've gotten a couple comparisons for Judah. Looks like he's playing pickup in the backyard, is because he's basically playing pickup basketball as the guy who's ball handling it, because it's only really a pick and roll. But I think on the defensive end, it's more important. The man, they played man in the first game to an extent in the first half, and it looked all right. But the zone just does not work with Joe Girard at the top. There's no length. Back when Kardari Richmond was at the top of the zone, getting steals, having his hand in the passing lanes, that's when the defense was at its best, the last time that I saw it, at least. So when you have Joe Girard at the top, it's not working. And if you can't get offensive rebounds, it's not going to be good. They let up 17 offensive rebounds to Illinois. And Syracuse overall is not a great rebounding team, especially in the zone. And the opponents are not shooting great in three-point percentage. They're shooting about 34% on the year. But it's the fact that they're making 10 three-point shots a game against the Orange. And in college basketball, that shouldn't really happen, especially when teams are making three-point shots. That's how they create the distance. And then Syracuse has to fight from behind.
All right, so we've hit on Joe. We've hit on a little bit of Judah. But let's shift gears here and talk a little forwards. I mean, I don't think there's anything too specific that's standing out as of recently as far as the play of Benny Williams, as far as the play of Chris Bell is concerned. Two guys that were receiving some scrutiny from Jim Boeheim, to start the year, saying, look, guys like Bell in particular need to find a way to get more active on the glass, get more active defensively, saying you can't just stand there and shoot. And for Bell against Illinois, 3 for 9, finished with 8 points. But again, for what it's worth, no Syracuse player hit double figures in that Illinois game. Where are we at, guys, as far as the pulse of the strides, or dare I say lack thereof strides, that the likes of Williams, the sophomore, and Bell, the freshman, have made during their time in the starting lineup?
I guess the problem is that everyone wants to score and everyone wants to shoot. And that's not a bad thing. Everyone should be able to score that's on the floor. But it seems that, you know, nobody's making the extra pass right now. And because there's not a lot, there's a lot of congestion on the floor. And Jim Boeheim is not really letting his players get into a rhythm. If they make one mistake, he's yanking them and putting someone. 11 guys played in the first half against Illinois. That's ridiculous. How can Quadir Copeland or Malik Brown take away from 2 minutes of play and say, you know, oh, I really felt good about myself after those 2 minutes out there? What can you take away from that? Absolutely nothing. I understand he's giving Bell and Benny and Taylor run, but like some of these other guys, I just feel bad for because they're not being given an equal shot to actually show what they can offer. It's either one good play or one bad play, and then you're out of here. From a Benny perspective, I like what I've seen. I just go back to what he said in the locker room after the St. John's game. He said him and Judah were so like in awe that they were playing in New York City for Syracuse. And that's just stuck with me for the last week, because what does that mean anymore? Like, does that still have the same cachet as it did 10 years ago, maybe even 5 years ago? Because it doesn't feel like it. So, you know, I understand that, like, that's awesome and that's something you work for and that's why you came to Syracuse, but what is Syracuse? And that's just what I keep coming back to. But seeing that kind of buy-in from Benny really encourages me. He's still getting there defensively, but I think his offensive game is better than we thought coming into the year, especially after what we saw last season. In terms of Bell, he just needs to be confident. And if he's confident, then I'm happy, even if he's missing shots. Because as long as he's taking shots, that's what he's on the floor to do. He is a really, really good shooter.
Yeah, I think with especially with the forwards, a lot of them being younger guys, I think you got to ride with them and kind of ride through the growing pains. Chris Bell, as Jim Boeheim has mentioned, doesn't rebound the ball. He had one rebound against Illinois, 8 points, which was, again, nobody in double figures, so you can't really take much from that. But I think what Jim has to really stress is get rebounds. If you can get rebounds, prevent other teams from getting on the offensive glass, and then you can have more possessions that can help you kind of get into a rhythm, then that'll translate to the offensive end. I think you just got to stress Jesse Edwards is doing the job with two straight 17 rebound games, but somebody's got to help him down low, get those rebounds so you can then have more offensive possessions and keep other teams from wearing you down on the defensive side.
I'm glad you bring up Edwards, Jordan. I think for me, he's really been the lone bright spot over these past few games, especially the tenacity we have seen on the boards. Only 9 points against Illinois and just 12 against Bryant. So the scoring totals taking a little bit of a dip for Edwards. But this is someone who, you know, obviously is very involved on both ends of the court for Syracuse, and you're just looking to take those game-to-game strides, as is really everyone on this Syracuse team, as they continue to try to gel cohesively as a unit and improve on what's been a rocky, and a very rocky at that, 3-4 start to the season, 3 straight losses for the Cuse. Any closing thoughts on Jim Boeheim's crew before we maybe work in a little bit of football here on a not really a whole lot going on, all too new with Dino Babers and company? They do end the year against Boston College on a high note and now just await that bowl game ruling, whatever it might be. And everyone and their mothers seem to have predictions, speculation as far as where the Orange are going to be going bowling. I'm very curious to see how this shakes out. I know there's been talk of when Syracuse's finals fall and how that sort of pertains to things as far as certain dates are concerned. I don't know. I think people might be overselling how much of an impact that has. You're telling me that they're going to go as far to pick bowl games based on finals weeks. I don't think that's what college athletics really boils down to at this point for a lot of these schools. But regardless, an interesting sort of what-if game to play nonetheless.
Yeah, Syracuse, I hope they play in a bowl in the Northeast, whether it's the Fenway Bowl, whether it's the Pinstripe Bowl, because that is, you know, I understand, you know, oh, I'd love to go to Orlando in the Gasparilla Bowl or Birmingham in the is it the Birmingham Bowl or whatever?
It is, yeah.
All right. Well, okay. All right. Pinstripe Bowl, the Fenway Bowl would be so much cooler. You'll have so much more support at either of those games than if you go down and play in the South. I think the Pinstripe Bowl has to be number one just because you'll be playing a Big Ten team, and that's better than playing, you know, an AAC team. No offense to the AAC, but I think we can all sit here and say that the Big Ten would be a more fun opponent than the AAC, especially after Syracuse's first game against the Big Ten this season. So I think that would be cool. I'm so done with Dino Babers. I mean, what an embarrassment that his undisciplined football team showed against BC. Why do you need to go plant a flag in the middle of the field? Why? Against a 3-win team. Who cares? Like, honestly, who cares? I understand that, you know, you got the flag in the end and you were the bigger man. But, you know, the only reason that team is doing that is because there isn't someone who told them don't do it in the first place. And that falls on you, Dino. So that frustrated me. Enrique Cruz punching a guy. I mean, what the heck? Like, it all comes back to coaching, and 7 wins saves his job. But I'm more of a process than a results guy, and the process to get to 7 wins should not have been the result that it got.
I was going to say, Ethan, unfortunately, I think Dino is coming back next year. I think John Wildhack confirmed it.
That's awesome. I'm excited.
Yeah. I was not too big of a fan of the flag plant either. I was shocked it caused more of a commotion in the Syracuse BC game than the Ohio State Michigan game when Michigan planted the flag. But when you have the most penalized team in the nation, it obviously falls on the head coach. And that's just kind of very disappointing. You start off 6-0, then you go 1-5. Luckily 1-5 with that fourth quarter. It was looking like 0-6. But bowl game wise, I mean, Gasparilla Bowl is number one on my list because that's a short drive over to Tampa from Florida from where I am.
Regardless, it should be very interesting to see where the Orange do end up. I'm with you, Ethan. I think Northeast is something that definitely would be beneficial for this team as far as getting fans there, as far as the alumni network is concerned. But hey, nothing wrong with a little bit of warm weather either if it does end up being somewhere down south. So 7-5 Syracuse getting ready for its bowl game, and 3-4 at Syracuse basketball trying to get back to 500 and back in the win column, something they haven't done since all the way back on November 21st in the opening game of the Empire Classic at the Barclays Center. That's just about going to do it for a very special edition of the Ostrom Avenue podcast, the Jordan Leonard debut episode. That's what we'll remember this one as. As far as our coverage on WAER Sports is concerned, it continues to roll along. We've got Saturday basketball for you, the Orange on the road in South Bend going up against Notre Dame in the ACC opener. And of course, all our coverage gets going with McClurg team countdown to tip off at 11:30 a.m. So make sure you don't sweep in too late on Saturday morning. And then Sunday is when the bowl games are indeed revealed. So keep it locked to our Twitter at Ostrom Avenue Pod and WAER Sports Twitter at WAER Sports for full coverage as far as any postseason bowl game updates are concerned for Syracuse football. Busy time. Syracuse basketball trying to, you know, right the ship here, and Syracuse football trying to make sure they end their season on a high note. Be sure to find new editions of the Ostrom Avenue podcast wherever you get your podcasts. We're also on YouTube, so you can check us out there for all your video content as well. With Ethan Frank, I'm Jordan Leonard. I was about to say, I'm Jordan Leonard. Wow.
You've said it so many times in a row now, Johnny, that
we're working in a new outro. You know what? Mentally, I'm making the switch. With Ethan Frank and Jordan Leonard, I'm Johnny Gadamowicz saying so long, enjoy the rest of your week, and we will talk to you next week. Have a good one.